Small businesses are the cornerstones of our local communities, and small business owners are hardworking and passionate people who are chasing down their ambitions while there's a lot on the line. So, let Verizon champion your small business dreams. Whether you own a small business, are scaling one, or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon, well, they've got you back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/StarTalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/StarTalk today.
Welcome to StarTalk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. StarTalk begins right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Nye the Science Guy!
Woo! Big one-armed guy hug.
Yes.
Eugene Merman, ladies and gentlemen. Woo! Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, kids of all ages, we have a fabulous show tonight, an amazing show. We are all going to leave this room spiritually. And go to Mars. The man who created Mark Watney, the man who wrote the book about being the Martian. Give it up for Andy Weir. I'm reluctant to say this is the funniest woman on earth, but she may very well be. Maeve Higgins. Maeve.
Thank you, Bill. Thank all you. Right.
Then straight from the best brand the United States has, from the Science Mission Directorate, Division for Planetary Science, Jim Green.
Woo!
Jim, thank you. So, Andy Weir, you created this amazing character, Mark Watney, who's, I know a woman who's just super hot for this guy. not for Matt Damon, but for Mark Watney.
Well, I mean, he's based on me, so just, you know.
Now, you wrote this book, you started out online?
Yeah, originally I wrote The Martian as just a series of blog posts.
Who was reading it?
Well, I'd accumulated about 3,000 regular readers over the course of 10 years of making, like, web comics and short stories and stuff like that. And they were my regular readers, and they were a bunch of hardcore dorks like me. And so...
there's one in the wild
there's
now.
There's one now. And so when I was writing it, I knew I had to be as scientifically accurate as possible because there's nothing a nerd likes more than calling out scientific inaccuracies.
So what's your, I know, it's true.
That's hot.
Now, do you still get people coming up to you and going like, that's not how you'd go to Mars?
Sort of, right?
Well, but Jim and I have worked things out now, so yeah. It's good.
So along that line, Jim, you, as long as, I mean, you spent a lot of time with Mars. You were there for, you ran Curiosity Landing?
Yes, I did.
You got us right on. Yeah. You ran Messenger, which we brought into Mercury.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was there for the launch of Juno. J-U-N-O is not an acronym. It's crazy.
Well, it's Jupiter's wife.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, all the moons that orbit Jupiter are named after the, in mythology, named after Jupiter's lovers. Like the ones he was cheating on his wife with. And now Juno's going to head on over there. And she's going to kick some ass, I think. You know, so Juno's on her way.
Not to get too far afield there, but aren't there 60 moons of Jupiter?
Yeah. Zeus slash Jupiter, he was a busy guy. If you look up the... About 90% of 90% of Roman mythology is like, Jupiter, no. And Jupiter's like, Jupiter, yes. So...
So speaking of gods, Mars is named after the god of war, which is very troublesome. Why was it named after the god of war?
Well, that's a Roman name. You know, prior to that, the Greeks named it Ares.
Was that the god of war?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's because it's
if you believe
so
DC
red.
Comics.
Yes, blood red.
It's blood red.
Blood red. And you can see it, of course, in January. Beautiful alignment. Go on out, take a look
just
at it just before the sun comes up.
Yes! So not yet, everybody. Wait.
Hold on.
10:30.
Stick around.
Stay in your seats.
So, you got time.
I almost called you Mark. That's the fictional character.
That happens so often, and it's awesome when it's in live radio interviews, too, because you can't just... Can't correct him, you know.
This is live.
So, Mark, tell. Oh, this is live too.
So, you finished this novel in 2011, and who approached you? Ridley Scott. Who approached you?
No, yeah, he just knocked on my door. No, no one approached me. I self-published it. So, basically, I had been putting it on my website a chapter at a time until I was done, and I thought, okay, I'm done. We're done with this. On to my next project. And then I got emails.
But didn't you have a job during all this?
Yeah, I was a computer programmer the whole time. So this was my hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody was like, wow, computer programmer?
Now they're interested.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why base classes always need virtual destructors later. The number of people who left, those are the ones who got
they're,
it.
They're there.
Yeah,
they're
this is Silicon Valley. Okay. So
it's very specific comedy.
So I figured I was done, move on to other serials, other short stories, and then I got email from people saying like, oh, hey, I love your story, but I hate your website, which is reasonable because it's crap. And it's just really
ghetto. Self-admitted.
Yeah, oh yeah.
He's a programmer, just remember.
Yeah, I'm a programmer. Not a graphics guy. And so they said, can you make an e-reader version so I can just download it and read it on my e-reader? And so I figured out how to do that, and I did that.
Did you have an income stream for this messing around?
No, this was all just fun. My income stream was from being a Silicon Valley software engineer, which is pretty good. So don't worry about me. So I did that. I said, like, okay, here's an e-reader version. So now you can read it on my site for free or download the e-reader version. And then other people contacted, you know, emailed and said, like, hey, love the Martian, hate your site. And I noticed that you have an e-reader version, but I'm not very technically savvy, and I don't know how to download a thing from the internet. And
so can you make a movie for me to watch? Does everybody know what happened? Okay.
There's a few.
You guys know what happened. You create a character. You create a whole crew of characters. They're on Mars. One's around 2035 or something like that.
Yeah, it's good you check your watch for that.
Yeah. It's like Martian time. And it's also, it tells the future. Tomorrow there will be a 749.
There will be
754.
Two of them.
Was there a reason that you chose 2035?
Yeah, actually, I did all the orbital trajectory analysis and calculation to figure out the best time to go to Mars with the ship that I designed.
Nerd man!
Yeah.
So
I wrote software to be there
in Thanksgiving.
What's that?
It had to be there in November.
So my constraints were that I wanted to be far enough in the future that it makes sense for the Ares program to have developed in the intervening time.
Ares is the name of the rocket.
Yep. Yeah, Ares is the name of the ship, or the program, actually. Mm-hmm. The name of the ship that took him there is Hermes, who is the messenger of the gods. Within Greek mythology, he goes from one god to another.
And makes those beautiful scarves in his downtime.
Yeah, Hermes. Yes. He's Hermes.
So talented.
That was funny because they did, if you watch the movie, in a few places they call it Hermes. Because Ridley Scott directed it and he says Hermes instead of Hermes.
Why does he say that?
And he also says Martinez instead of Martinez. Yeah. But anyway.
The British people here. Anybody Scottish people?
Can we talk?
Oh, Maeve, you know.
Can we talk back?
I wake you up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Do you talk the way that.
Yeah.
People, you mean is her accent?
Do you talk the way real people do?
Ask me that again. You mean, am I dreaming in my accent?
No. Yeah. I mean, do you put it on just for us? Just
he
to
really,
impress us?
Like is this elaborate character that I've been doing for 34 years? Yes.
It's a conspiracy among millions and millions of Irish people.
They're actually.
What could make us more adorable? Yeah. No, it's just.
And I also want to know.
Anyway, these guys end up on Mars.
Well, wait. I got one other question for you. What other things would happen if he woke you up in the middle of the night? He's just there, you know. He's right there.
I would be surprised. And I mean, we work together. It's not really,
appropriate.
Yeah, it would be inappropriate. But then, he's very
handsome.
Well known, and I'm at the beginning of my career. Yeah, we can work it out. Yeah,
we can work it out.
Yeah.
I really hope my boyfriend hears this.
I'm not so sure I do. Yeah. So, Andy, these guys, the crew ends up on Mars, and something goes horribly wrong, and one guy gets left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend a movie, trying to resolve this issue. I don't want to give too much away, but Matt Damon plays the lead character. And he makes it to the end. Okay, he doesn't.
Spoiler.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Spoiler. Yeah.
But Andy, what drives you? What makes you want to do this?
About half the people are just storming out in anger.
I had no idea.
What drives me to do this? I've been a space dork my whole life. I was pretty much doomed to be one. My father's a physicist. My mother's an engineer. When I was a kid, the space shuttle program was new and exciting, which was probably going to make some people feel kind of old. But
I'm all right.
Go back to sleep.
It's back in my day.
For you guys, you know, when you were kids, the space program was Chinese people inventing gunpowder, right? I mean, but so. But
and Captain Kirk fabricated it.
Yes, that's right. To defeat the Gorn, I believe. Defeat the Gorn. And so I've always been a science dork, and I've always loved this stuff. And I came up with this idea for an astronaut stranded on Mars. But I wanted everything to be physically accurate, just because I always get taken out of a story when I see some blatant physical inaccuracy.
Fairly accurate too, right? Or very accurate?
Oh, the book's delightful in many ways. But you know it is.
Is the book delightful scientifically?
Let me think about that. So, you know, it's science fiction. There are things in the book that, we don't find on Mars. Not yet, anyway. Might happen someday.
Exempli gradia, for example.
Oh. Well, Matt Damon's not on there.
Yeah. So,
but there is a guy from Boston.
Probably buried. Is that what you meant? Buried somewhere on Mars? So,
from the Big Dig.
Turns out that's where Jimmy Hoffa is.
The dust storm. Okay, you know, Mars has famous dust storms. They go, global sometimes.
You can see them with telescopes from Earth, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they
obscure
look
gnarly the entire planet.
From space sometimes. But in reality, the pressure is so low.
How low is it?
It's very low.
About 1/200
atmosphere.
Yeah,
1/200 of an atmosphere, roughly.
Of what we have, and so although the winds can be pretty hefty, it can be 120 miles an hour, but that's not enough to straighten an American flag, let alone blow away a radio dish.
Because there's so few molecules going that fast.
Right, that's right.
So did you have trouble watching the movie with all its lies then?
No, absolutely not.
Were you like another lie, another lie? Stop lying to me, Ridley.
Are you going to put it on Ridley? All right.
Yeah, I could.
Yeah.
Frickin' Ridley.
Now, what you got to do...
Guy. Your book's accurate, delightfully so.
Delightfully so. But you got to check the science at the door and go on in and enjoy it. It's enjoyable. It's great.
You're
you know, I do
about
that kind of
movie,
stuff all day long.
Job.
Why do I want to sit in
the
movie theater and think about some more of it?
Andy, as Nerdman, had to work out some serious scientific problems.
Yeah, I did. Yes, absolutely. The dust storm is, or the sandstorm is inaccurate. And I knew that at the time. I just didn't care. I wanted a good reason to strand him there. And at the time I wrote it, most people didn't know that. Like, most people thought that a sandstorm on Mars. But then, because The Martian got so popular and became a very popular movie and then got a bunch of scientists talking about it, now everybody knows a dust storm on Mars can't do that. So
but
I shot myself
cool.
in the foot.
It was, you blew the thing over and yes. you couldn't see.
Right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, what are those chunks, by the way, that were coming out?
I don't know.
Space
but,
debris.
Space debris. One of my favorite things is how JPL almost ruined everything. When I wrote the book, it was done. It was already in final editing. I can't make any more changes other than like copy editing and, you know. And like at that point, like they were deciding, they had it down to the final four candidates of where they're going to land Curiosity. They eventually landed it, you know, near Mount Chartingale Crater. But Mount Chartingale Crater.
On Mars, you know.
Yeah, on
the
Mars.
The big one.
Right, on Mars.
Not the
which is one. Which is thousands and thousands of kilometers away from all the things that happen in the Martian, not a problem. One of the final four candidates on where they were thinking about landing it was Marth Vallis, which Mark drives through. Like, I specifically call it out in the book. He drives through this ravine, right. Marth Vallis. He would have had to have gone around the rover to keep going. And I'm like, oh, you guys are killing me with your stupid real stuff. And then my favorite little
it's like they didn't even take that into account.
It's like they, you know... Nobody asked me.
Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. Oh, well. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I know.
Well, so, Jim, what made the final decision?
No, actually, I didn't. But we were down to the last four, and I loved any one of those. So my boss did, and that was Ed Weiler at the time. And
so, yeah, everybody, this is the real guy. That's all I'm saying.
This is the... So, just so we're clear, the character in the book, Venkat Kapoor, who is in the movie Vincent Kapoor, he holds that position in the real NASA. So if you're curious, that's who he is. So
your tax dollars at work.
That's right. And they work, too.
But my favorite little, you know, stories of, like, you know, space research screwing with me is the University of Arizona that runs the HiRISE instrument.
High-resolution camera. Orbiting Mars.
Apparently, we have like four of their alumni here today. But
four people who are anyway, great at clapping.
They in
they
in
just
the
got
book,
the joke Bill made 10 minutes ago.
In the book, yeah. Well, they're U of A. I mean, but
somebody got it.
Yeah. But in the book, I give the exact latitude and longitude of the HAB. And so
the HAB is the
the habitat, the main the base where most of the Martian takes place, where Mark Watney is stranded, where they are,
their
landing
the
site
nots.
Habitat. And so I described the terrain as being kind of flat and sandy. There's not much going on in Acidalia Planitia. It's a large, empty desert and stuff like that. And the guys who run HiRISE are like, let's check. And so they did these super high-res photos of the HAB's location on the real Mars. And they're like, well, that's nothing like he described it.
Yeah, but Ridley got it right. You know, because there's some beautiful craters right around where that HAB would be, and the scenery looks great.
Yeah, it does.
Those people must hate Star Wars.
Yeah.
Almost. Yeah.
So they don't have good resolution on galaxies far, far away.
We don't have a camera for that yet.
Yeah, we're working on it.
Okay, thank you.
So the guy's on Mars. He's got a lot of food. Because there were supposed to be six people, but he's only one?
Yeah, and they left in the book, they left after 6 days of a planned 31-day mission, and they had redundant food supplies. So he had enough food to last about 400 souls. A soul is a day on Mars, for the four of you who don't know that. Well, three of you and one of her, I guess.
Wait, I know it is that, but why is that? Why is it called a soul?
Soul is Latin for sun. It just means, because day is an ambiguous term. Day to scientists means the time it takes Earth to rotate once on its axis, just Earth. So Mars rotating on its axis. That's one Martian soul.
I remember. During the disco era.
A different soul.
That's right.
Different soul. The soul train.
Tell us what Studio 54 was like, Bill.
I don't remember, man.
Yeah, he was there.
Bill Nye, science high guy.
Bill.
Stereotype. You don't always do that well with the ladies. The stereotypical male in here. I know, it's shocking.
What's worse is a computer programmer, by the way.
Well, until... but still,
a computer programmer, and I wrote a book about Mars, so... Keep it calm, ladies.
That's right. To that end, we're going to take a break, and Star Talk will be back right after this.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true. Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
We've been
talking about Mars. Mars. Hypothetically, the Martian, the movie, the book, this hypothetical character living, surviving on this hostile world. But Andy, when Viking landed on Mars, 1976, a sol was this hip new word. And the length of a day, a sol on Mars is very much like an Earth, the Earth, right?
Yeah. It's
a... So if a guy's going to find a way to come up with some new food source, he's going to have sunlight.
Yep. But that's not not really what our hero does. I mean, he's inside the hab, so he used the lighting of the hab to help grow food.
It's much less sunlight. You're 1.5 times as far away, right?
Right, and but he had a huge solar farm. So effectively, it's rather inefficient, but he didn't have a lot of equipment to work with, so he's like collecting energy with the solar farm and then using it to power lights inside the hab.
What should he have done?
Jim, what should he have done?
Well, he did exactly what I would have done. However, you know, sorry.
You are so diplomatic. I really enjoy that about you.
It's a massive voice.
You know how to get more funding.
So, you guys, you just don't know. As CEO of the Planetary Society, I can tell you there was a great deal to that little insight. This is diplomacy, man, right here. Okay.
No,
so what would you do? Would you not send...
Well, I would have definitely had the imagers see his dead body on Ares 3. Yeah, I'm playing my part on the movie. Sorry about that. but you know, the soil where Curiosity is very acidic. And so asparagus would grow nice. And, oh, my God, asparagus for 500 days.
And his pee would just smell so bad.
Yeah. Wait, it really would? Asparagus would grow in
that soil? Yeah, in the acidic soil. So in the alkaline soils, the potatoes would grow better.
So just, but you guys, everybody, he grows potatoes. That's how he lives through it.
Yeah, spoiler. Yeah.
We've literally ruined the movie for you.
It's, well, what it's only going to get worse, I'm afraid.
So another one of those great things where NASA ruined me was they
landed Curiosity.
After Curiosity landed. So in the book, he has to go through this huge ordeal to make enough water to survive. He needs to, because the water system within the hab is self-contained. You know, humans consume water, humans give out an equal amount of water, so it's fine. But to grow potatoes, he needs a lot more water. He needs to moisten all this soil that he's bringing in. He needs hundreds of liters of water. So he takes hydrazine from the descent vehicle that had brought him there, goes through his chemical reaction.
Perfectly safe.
Yeah, like incredibly dangerous. Goes through this chemical reaction to liberate the hydrogen, then collects CO2 from the atmosphere, runs that through the oxygenator to liberate the oxygen, then mixes them together to make water. Yeah. Okay, that's great.
Okay.
Turns out, you know, Curiosity goes to Mars, scoops up some sand and goes like, there's a shitload of water in here. And it's like 35 liters of water for every cubic meter of Martian soil or regolith, because you're not supposed to call anything off of Earth soil.
Would he be able to get the water out of
what you do, it's
that?
Very complicated. Sure. You have to bring the soil in and then you have to heat it.
I think I could do that.
Yeah.
I feel like I would do fine on Mars.
So to put this into terms that, you know, don't require you to do a bunch of math in your head, if you took a refrigerator and filled it with Martian soil and then got all the water out of that soil, you would have 35 2-liter bottles of water.
Just like that.
That's a pretty good recipe.
The entire subplot where he's getting water wouldn't have mattered. And so to answer your thing, since in real life it would be so easy for him to get a hold of that much water, he could have gotten a whole bunch more water than the soil he brought in and used that to scrub the soil.
Well, actually, you know, recently we found weeping craters.
Yeah.
You know, during the summer season, they you know, what we believe is happening is that
they miss Mark.
There's one.
What's a weeping crater? I like that a lot, by the way.
Yeah.
So during the summer, light from the sun shines on these crater walls, and they're what we believe are underground aquifers, and the water plug sublimates and it just pours down the side of the craters.
So it's like a waterfall.
Yeah.
Are there people swimming in it? It sort of creeps.
I mean, it's
not for long because
it wets the soil.
It boils
off. Water wets the soil.
Lovely.
And then eventually.
So he should have buckets.
Well, he would have normally gone to his well. where it would have gone down to the aquifer and pumped out the water.
I'm not sure how many recurring slope lineae there are in the relatively flat areas.
There's one within 100 miles, closer than Pathfinder.
Guys.
Whoa.
Break it up.
How about this? There's a sequel to The Martian. Somebody gets stranded, and it's like 25 minutes long, and it's fine. He survives fine.
He just gets the water.
Because he's like, oh my God, there's all this water, and plus this. Oh, look, the Curiosity.
Now, Andy, where'd you get the idea to take potatoes?
So potatoes, I went through a bunch of different possible crops. The ones originally what I wanted
but
to do
But not asparagus.
Not asparagus.
Thank God.
The one I originally wanted to grow for him to grow was peas, because it makes perfect sense for there to be peas in the meal pack, and peas are the seeds for peas. I mean, that's you plant peas,
that's
you get peas.
I got to say, concern me about the potatoes, but go ahead.
Yeah. So why were the potatoes still viable?
Well, I thought it was a nod to your Irish heritage.
It was not. No, I mean, as any normal person would, I try to hide the Irish, you know.
Oh.
You can beat me up later. The potato thing was because there is nothing that potatoes have the very highest calorie yield per cropland area of anything. So if he were to grow peas, he would just not, in the land area he had inside the hab and all the volume he had access to, he could not possibly have maintained his calorie needs, but potatoes will do it.
But he had to fertilize it.
Yeah, well, fortunately, he has a method of producing that.
No, it is the most popular line in the movie. I think it's the most popular line in the book, and it's a meme. It's so popular. Everybody hip, I got to science the shit out of this.
Yes. Accurately, he science the shit into it, but... What's funny is, just worth noting, people come up to me, I love that line, my favorite line in the whole book is, I'm going to science the shit out of it. Yeah, that line's not in the book. That line was made up by Drew Goddard, who wrote the screenplay for the film. So I'm like, well, I'm glad you liked it. I'll tell Drew.
He's a cool guy.
He's a great guy. Yeah, and he's up for an Academy Award for Best Adapted Screenplay. So,
yeah. Thank you. So he pulls it off. Our hero pulls it off. And how long did it take you to figure all this stuff out?
It took me about 3 years to write the book.
Because you haven't done a lot of farming.
Not a lot.
A little? Have you done a little farming?
No.
Did you grow a potato?
Nope. I have a brown thumb. I kill anything I try to grow.
Do you? Are you friends with botanists?
Nope. I did all my research online. By the way, I didn't know anyone in aerospace at the time I wrote the book. All my research was just Google.
Do you know a farmer?
Nope.
Hmm? Hey, Jim.
I know Google.
Have you at this point met Matt Damon?
Yeah, lots of times now because of publicity events and stuff like that.
Great.
Yeah, he's like that. So,
please tell him I say hello.
I'll let him know.
You're from Iowa. You were born in Iowa.
Born in Iowa.
Are you, just to go stereotypical, were you a farmer?
No. I was a townie.
A townie?
Yeah.
In Burlington?
But you drove in a convertible hitting people in the face?
You probably grew up with shoes and everything, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your favorite part of the movie?
My favorite part of the movie actually is when Mark Watney, after he extracts the rod out of him and begins to survive, and he's thinking about all the things on Mars that would kill him, and he enumerates them one right after the other, and you can see he's depressed. He's, you know, probably one of the most depressed moments, and he finally figures out. He becomes the astronaut he really is. What he's going to do next. And you can see that come over him. It's just wonderful. Yeah, the transformation. I am not going to die. And that was it. And that's what they do. You know, NASA's really famous for having the people that take almost insurmountable problems and solve them one at a time along the way. And that's one of the really great things about the book and really great things about the movie. And that is, that's what you have to do to be able to make it in this environment.
When you, for survival, you solve one problem at a time.
That's
right.
And you
keep your sense of humor.
Right. But, of course, that the great part about the book, of course, is you thought you solved it, and then you'd have another problem, sometimes even bigger than the last.
Doggone it! But, Jim.
Yes,
what's really going on Mars right now? And I say going on. What are we doing? What are we learning about Mars? You alluded to the weeping craters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're making discoveries you know, at a rapid rate. And that's because we have some wonderful assets at Mars. We have several orbiters.
Science talk for spacecraft.
It's not a person who's there who's like undercover, who you need to wake, and then he'll, anyway.
True. And these spacecraft are making fabulous measurements. One we just put in orbit not too long ago is called MAVEN. And it's designed to see how the solar wind interacts with the atmosphere. You know, here on Earth, we're so lucky we have our magnetic field.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel it.
We are so lucky.
That's something, if you're doing a gratitude list and you're searching for reasons, like you've had a terrible week, you can be like, magnetic
field. Thank God for the magnetic field.
No, you guys, it makes the solar wind, these charged particles come to the poles like this and not
or just go around entirely.
Yeah, or miss.
Either way, we wouldn't be here talking about it if
it's another example.
Life probably would not be on this planet if it weren't for their magnetic fields.
Well, that's one of the things we're finding out, because it's really stripped Mars's atmosphere.
How long did that take?
Well, it's been going on for billions of years.
How many?
Probably the last 3.5 billion years that's been happening. But Mars had an enormous magnetic field early on. And so when it was born, along with the
Earth... How do we know that? That's cool. How do we know that?
We can actually measure the remnant magnetic field from space that's laying on the surface of Mars. You know, Mars doesn't generate the field anymore inside. Because, but when it did...
Do we know why?
Because it lost its molten core. Yeah.
What happened to its molten core?
It cooled.
Is there anything I can do to help?
I wish you could.
Yeah.
But you can't.
I believe you.
Yeah.
Even if I summon the powers of Thor?
So Mars is smaller than the Earth, right?
Yeah, it is. But much bigger than the Moon.
Yeah, but this made it cool off, yeah?
It does cool off faster than the Earth. That's that's what our planetary scientists say. But
it didn't hold it. What I'm getting at, didn't that make the magnetic churning iron inside slow down and cool off and harden
well,
up?
Well, you know, there's a couple other ideas. There's some huge impacts that are on Mars, a place called Hellas Basin. And it's actually in the opposite hemisphere of where the huge volcanoes were.
Which is Olympus Mons?
Olympus Mons and the Tarsus Ridge and all the beautiful volcanoes.
Was Mars once very fun?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it was. Very wet, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Northern Hemisphere, probably 25 or 30% of the Northern Hemisphere was an ocean.
Oh, wow.
And so 3.5 billion years ago, we now know Mars looked like the Earth. It had rain. It had clouds.
It
snowed.
Like, did it have, like, McDonald's?
Was there Def Leppard?
Well, we didn't have it at the time either, so...
Well, it's got rockets.
We don't know that.
Rocket?
They've been here forever.
So what...
that's the Grateful Dead.
Oh, whoa. What are the other explanations for the magnetic field cooling off?
There's a giant impacts. Giant impacts. Anything that would change the differential rotation where the currents are. So an impact... cooling, something stopped that current that generates the field.
Which we have here on Earth.
Thank goodness we have here on Earth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the magnetic field has played an important role. And we're just becoming aware of that because we are at Mars seeing what happens with a planet that doesn't have one.
So it stripped away the atmosphere.
Most of it, yeah.
And the water, what happens to the water?
Well, as soon as that starts, it evaporates. But it also underground. This is what we also found out from now more and more of our observations, and that is the aquifers, there's ice layers underneath, and in fact, we found a buried glacier.
Where is that?
Well, it's not,
Mars,
where, not where Ares 3 is, but it's halfway between where Curiosity is and where...
So if I used my cell phone, could I get there? I mean, would it, the GPS?
Yeah. I mean, I could show you on your, on a map where it's at. But it's on the ancient coastline, where the old coast used to be.
Those were the days.
right now, the resources and things that we're finding on Mars, and I've been telling the astronaut corps this too, is don't bring all your water, bring a straw. Bring a straw, because we'll tell you where to go to get it. Plenty of resources that are there if we use them.
In situ resource utilization, ISRU. That's big.
ISRU, yes.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing. I love that. No, just sorry. I'm not making a joke. I know you're used to me just being a smartass all the time. But no, it's ISRU. I think that's absolutely the key to Mars exploration. There's plenty of water. Where you have, as long as you have energy, you can do everything else you need. Because I mean, water. You break water apart, you've got rocket fuel.
Yeah,
I mean, that's it. Or you break water apart and then mix it creatively with methane, and you've got better rocket fuel.
Well, your book has got it. I mean, you know, you've got the oxygenator, and in Mars 2020, which is our next big rover that we're going to launch in 2020. We haven't gotten a great name for it yet. We'll run a contest. We'll do something.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You need to be the spiritual opposite of curiosity. You want it to be called ennui. Just like, do not care about these miles.
Yeah. No, yeah.
So, how about Mr. Ding Dong?
Submit it.
Know it all.
Submit it. The Planetary Society will run the contest. Submit it, please.
Let me.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jim.
Yeah.
When do you think people will be walking on Mars?
Well, I believe it's going to happen in my lifetime. You know, we're...
You're a kid.
I am.
So, Jim plans to live to be 500 years old.
Yeah.
That's why I'm a vampire. So,
and that's why I'm sitting over here.
Are you an immortal?
Obviously. But, you know, we're following the president's direction. And indeed, we want to be in
You do everything he...
Well, you know.
Until
anything that guy says, you're just like, yeah.
And, you know, he is... NASA's part of the administration. So the president is, you know, my boss's boss's boss. And so we're heading in that direction, and indeed, it's the right direction. So he wants us to be able to have a presence in and around Mars in the 2030s. So that could be, you know, going to Phobos, Deimos, perhaps doing what we did to the moon, going out as a figure eight and coming back. So we want to be able to go out and come back. And then after that, in the 2040s and on, begin to get humans down to the ground.
I want to get there sooner than that. But with that said, you know, the Planetary Society, of which I'm the CEO, we did a study in the end of March, beginning of April, where we brought 70 people from around the world, and we did an analysis, Jim, that we could send people in orbit around Mars in 2033. You can only go to Mars, Maeve, I know you're excited, every 26 months. And there's
journey.
A lot...
Yeah, there's a lot of good orbits, but 2033 is an especially good one. Mm-hmm. And the premise of the bit, as we say in...
Is that when he... You went...
2035. They're assuming home and transfer ellipses probably, and I don't necessarily buy into those as best. But
so the deal is, we did this analysis that you don't have to increase the NASA budget except adjusting for inflation, and you could get humans in orbit around Mars in 2033, and they could hypothetically on that trip land on Phobos, which you described as the
space station of Mars.
The space station of Mars. And so you could land there and study Mars from above, and then subsequently you could go down to the surface if people just decided it was worth doing.
Well, you could also study Mars on Phobos because a lot of Mars is sitting on the surface.
But this is with people we're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah.
So Albert out there, audience, Sartakians, do you want to send people to Mars in 2033? It would be cool.
If we increase the budget, could it be much sooner? Like, is the science there and just the money isn't?
Well, there are some technologies that we have to work on. So we're doing the Mark Watney thing, and that is we're solving some technically tough problems along the way.
For example?
We want to get down on the ground many ton. You know, Curiosity we put down was a one-ton rover, one metric ton. But
from a sky crane.
Yeah, some neat engineering.
Yeah, Wile E. Coyote method of landing things. It's fantastic. You guys just need to stencil Acme on the site. It's great.
Well, there's a good reason why it was done the way
everything
it was.
Everything
that
great. Everything,
so. Yeah. I hope there was a good reason. We weren't just jamming.
No.
Hey, cool.
But, you know, to do this kind of station that Mark Watney's at, that's got to be about 40 ton or so. So we want to be able to put at least...
But hold it, 40 tons?
Yeah.
That's not that... That's not a million times
correct.
As right.
Correct.
It's like I can see it from here.
And we can see it from here. So there's a variety of techniques that we're developing right now that will be able to put more mass down on the ground.
And how long does it take to get there?
Well, from the top of the atmosphere down to the ground, about 7 minutes.
No, you mean to get to
from Earth. Yeah. How much from Dallas?
Yeah.
For that area.
7 minutes and...
That is a million-dollar question because...
Or billion-dollar.
Well, yeah. Multi-billion-dollar question because it has to do with the propulsion systems that you need to design. So the lowest energy transfer from Earth to Mars is called a Hohmann transfer ellipse, and it takes a little over 8 months. And that is the least amount of delta V necessary to get
changing
from Earth
speed.
To Mars. Changing speed. The least amount of oomph that you need. However, if you have ion drives or ion propulsion systems like the fictional one in The Martian, which is a real technology that real space probes have used, just not to that magnitude, then you could get there much quicker. Bad news is you need an energy source for it, which also means convincing the various nations of the Earth that it's okay to put a nuclear reactor in space. Mm-hmm. And
nuclear reactor in space.
Yeah. And so,
if we use molten salt, it's safe.
Yes,
that's something I learned recently.
Thorium reactors. Yeah.
It's more than 6 months and less than a year to get to Mars.
Right.
And if you punch it, you get.
Yeah, faster. Then you can stay there for about 20 days, a short stay. You know, that's what the Ares crew was doing.
You get used to the time zone.
And then you have to come back. And that, and that.
20 days is enough to, like, really relax, though. That's good.
Yeah.
That's like,
get some Z's.
Oh, yeah, now I feel refreshed. And I'm ready for a six-month trip home.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, I just turned off my phone and stayed on Mars for a while. Feel much better.
You could. Because when it's on the far side and there's no spacecraft above you, your phone would be off.
Yeah.
By the time we sent people to Mars, I guarantee you there would be at least one telemetry satellite in the sky at all times.
Yeah. Then I would go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, indeed, if you miss that 20-day window coming back, then you're going to have to stay there for a good 300 or 400 days and then come back in the next...
So they're taking potatoes.
Maybe do 19 days just to keep a safe data. Like,
guess you oversleep.
Yeah. It's one thing to be like, I have to stay because there's a snowstorm. Another, like, oh, I have to stay for 1 year because of a snowstorm.
Oh my gosh.
Now, let me ask you guys this. Hang on. Now, you talk to people. There's these guys who want to go to Mars one way and live, and people want to go there. I want to go die on Mars. Well, you probably will. But What do you think about, I say this only, I have strong opinions, which, as you know, are correct, but how many people want to terraform Mars? We're going to make Mars like the Earth. We're going to take that water, stir up the dirt, the sand, and it'll be just like home.
Well, that may be fine for them, but you know, right now, scientifically, we want to study it in the way it is. We want to understand everything about it before we bring
humans
there.
Those living things that might be
there. They might be there, but I mean, you know, there's resources that we want to know about so that we can use them. Mars is going to change on its own. You know, the temperature of the sun continues to rise and heats all our planets, and rising the
temperature... Solar warming.
Pardon?
Solar warming.
Real problem. So, by the way, if there's any climate deniers out there, it's got nothing to do with it. Okay, get over it.
Yeah, the sun's going to do this regardless.
Yeah, we're talking regardless. 4 billion years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but you could change the temperature of Mars in the future with the sun's energy increasing by 4 degrees C, or about 7 degrees Fahrenheit. That takes the CO2 top, sublimates from the pole, leaving this huge ice cap of water underneath it, then to also melt, because the CO2 will form a greenhouse. And then Mars will return to a little bit of like what it was 3 billion years ago, with a huge climate, much more extensive atmosphere.
Yeah, how long will this take? Like, are we talking months, or are we talking weeks?
No, it's going to take a while.
By 2033?
No, it won't be by 2033.
Millions of years,
yes,
or billions?
Several hundred million years.
That is too long, in my opinion.
It's about 800 million years.
I was really hoping to see a lush Mars.
Sooner rather than later.
A little bit.
Yeah, well, that won't happen in our lifetime. But, that's what exploration is all
about. Not without technological intervention.
So, Jim, what do you need? Your planetary division of the Science Mission Directorate.
That's right.
Adding as many acronym letters as we can get in there. What do you need to pull this off?
Well... Indeed, we benefit from the enormous support by the American people. You know,
now, when you say enormous, you guys, when you say enormous, I'm of an age where it was routine to hear people say, if they can put a man on the moon, why can't they blank, make a magic marker cap that doesn't fall off, or whatever.
Yeah. So the answer is always obvious. NASA's not in the business of building the magic markers, or we would have.
But not just the
You
three,
do make great markers.
In the Apollo era, the NASA budget was 4% of the federal budget. 4%. Now the NASA budget is 0.4% of the federal.
That's right.
So it's a tenth of what it was in the Apollo era.
That's true.
So what would you guys want it to be? I mean, what is the military? 18%?
I think it's 22.
22%.
Might be, it's 22.
In other words, the NASA budget used to be a fifth of the military budget. Now it's a 50th of the military budget. But what would you need? You need faster rockets, bigger rockets?
Well, we're doing the investment right now with the funding we do get from the American people through Congress in a really judicious way. From a science perspective, we're studying the heck out of Mars. We want to know everything
about it.
Okay. We're sciencing the shit out of it.
If you went on television and swore, you would get all the money you need.
It's true.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but I just did.
On the radio. Oh. I'm talking about really reaching people.
But,
this reaches people, sorry.
The scientifically, Mars is ours at the moment. We really want to be able to understand it, and that will mitigate risk for our humans to go.
Why'd you look at me, mitigate risk? What did I do?
No, I was just looking around.
Stop the bungling idiots from getting...
When you say mitigate risk, you mean getting killed being much less likely.
Well, you could take the Mark Watney approach of, burning hydrazine, or you could take,
a straw.
A straw, yeah, that's right. So these are the things that we learn along the way.
And indeed, that helps us figure out where we want to go. We just had a major workshop with the scientists and the engineers that do a lot of this resource planning and got them together and say, here's Mars, where would you put humans and why? And we got 50 locations of just fabulous places to go on Mars. And we're studying those. This has been Star Talk about Mars. We've had Andy Weir, creator of The Martian, Maeve Higgins, insightful comedian, Jim Green, director of planetary science at NASA, and Eugene Mirman. I've been your host, Bill Nye. Listen to Star Talk and turn it up loud. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.